when you think about no as really the second best possible answer, it actually makes it okay. I remember getting a firm no and being like, okay, I feel fine about this and I'm ready to move on and put my time elsewhere where I think, you know, it's certainly going to be more valuable for those folks that are out there that are, you know, I'm either already helping or want to help.
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fritzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fritzen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Be That Lawyer, the show that helps attorneys to kick some butt. Anyway, I hope everybody's doing well today. You know, just an interesting twist today. I've got a friend of mine and a client of mine, Jeremy Schneider. He's a principal at Jackson Lewis. And we're just going to talk a little bit about business development and how he came around. And we're working together currently. And so maybe he'll share some insights to what is going on and behind the scenes in a Fritzen class or a Fritzen program. Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to letting everybody know about the nuclear launch codes.
You're going to share the details of the codes?
That's it.
Okay. Well, that's all right. I just want to say for the record, you know, as long as this interview is better than Neil Dishman's, we'll be fine.
I'm very confident that I can do better than both Neil Dishman and Brian Weinthal.
Oh, wow. The gauntlet has been thrown down. So now we're going to get all kinds of rude comments on social media from them. But okay, let's play that out and see what happens. I think you might be onto something here. So do me a favor and give a little background on, you know, kind of your legal background and then also kind of where you are with the firm and from there.
Right. So I'm a labor and employment lawyer with Jackson Lewis. The firm is a national labor and employment firm. We really do anything having to do with the workplace. And for my part, I'm a labor and employment litigator. I help my clients manage the risk associated with their employees. And when disputes inevitably arise, I defend them in litigation and arbitration and before administrative agencies. I've been practicing for about 10 years now. Started off on the plaintiff side when I first started practicing and then moved to another kind of AmLaw 100 firm for a year or two, and then made the move to Jackson Lewis when I realized I really wanted to focus on labor and employment and have access to and kind of a national reach for my clients in servicing them for anything having to do with employment law.
Yeah. So, you know, not untraditional or traditional, I think is a pretty standard sort of, you know, play by play of what, you know, kind of what lawyers go through in their first 10 years and try to figure out like where their home should be, right?
Yeah. You know, I went to law school during one of the worst times to go to law school. So it was the Great Recession was in full swing and there weren't a lot of jobs out there. And a mentor of mine said to me, you know, you might want to just try to focus on something, as opposed to just be wanting to come out of law school and be a litigator. And I also went to school at George Washington University Law School at night while working full-time during the day. And so I had an opportunity to work full-time at a plaintiff side labor and employment firm here in Washington, D.C. And I sort of just fell in love with it, with the work, and realized that I wanted to represent management as opposed to employees for a whole host of reasons. And then made, you know, kind of a couple moves after that to get to where I am right now, which I think is, you know, a really great place for clients to get labor and employment legal services.
And let's flip it a little bit to, you know, there's finding your home at a law firm and obviously building up your skills as a lawyer. But at what point did you sort of come to the realization that business development was important to you?
So I can remember in my third year practicing, I can remember being at a firm and looking around and seeing sort of there's four or five people in this office of 40 to 50 lawyers whose names are on all the bills and who are the people who are generating all of the work. And I just remember thinking to myself, you know, these folks really have it good. They are kind of not doing every bit of work that's coming out of the office, but they're at the same time, they're managing clients, managing relationships, and helping young lawyers sort of develop in their craft. And I like that piece of it. I like the relationship management piece of practicing law. Of course, I love to litigate. I love representing my clients. I love doing legal work, and the labor and employment work that I do, I am particularly passionate about. What I realize is that the folks who I admired where I was, they were people managers. They love to manage relationships, and that was something I wanted for myself.
Got it. And you connected the dots between that, and I have to actually go out and get my own clients.
Yeah. I mean, there were other lawyers that I was working with that had been practicing for 10, 12 years, and they were still associates. They hadn't advanced, and they didn't have, any significant book of business to speak of. And I realized pretty quickly that this is the path to sort of job security and personal fulfillment in your career. And of course, financial, benefits associated with working in a large law firm all come about from having a book of business.
Because there are a lot of bigger firms like yours where it's really not emphasized to go out, and they want the associates to do the work. They want them to bill a tremendous amount of hours, and they're not really looking for them to grow their own books because they want to keep them busy with their stuff. So how do attorneys that are in that particular, hamster on a wheel type of thing, get out of it? How did you get out of it, or how did you get away from that?
So I got out of it by looking for an opportunity to work somewhere where that type of attorney development was valued. Jackson Lewis is particularly entrepreneurial, especially among other like labor and employment law firms. I think we do a very, very good job of encouraging associates to develop business and then giving them the tools to try to do that. I can remember coming over to Jackson Lewis, and immediately the partners who I worked with were saying, okay, well, who are your contacts? And if you want to start taking them out to lunch, please, you have the firm credit card, use it. The firm will pay. If you're really working at developing business, we're happy to encourage that for you. And so I was very fortunate to come into that type of situation, but a lot of associates are not in that situation. There are law firms where, associates are looked at as billers, and they aren't sort of shepherded along in the other aspects of law firm life and law firm success that, I fortunately was able to find at Jackson Lewis. And so what I now do at Jackson Lewis is try to help my colleagues, the people who I work with, the associates who I work with, to do the same thing that I did.
So prior to meeting me and working with me, and we're currently still engaged together, but what were some of the things that you had been doing to develop business? How did you get your book built?
So, I worked really hard at it, not necessarily super smart at it, but really put a lot of time into cultivating relationships, going to networking events, meeting people for lunch, trying to sell existing clients on additional services that our firm offers. And sort of what ended up happening for me in the last 2 to 3 years is I realized that I was starting to develop a fairly sizable book of business, but I was spending way more time than I thought was necessary in continuing to develop the book of business. And so that was part of the reason why I called you, because I felt like I was just pouring time into it as opposed to having a system in place or focusing on the things that really do lead to additional opportunities.
And I think going back to Neil Dishman for a minute, since we're picking on him today, he used to call it sheer force of effort, I believe, was what his, and it was about himself, not about you, but that's what it sounds like. You were kind of on that same platform of, just outwork everybody and put as many hours into it as you possibly can to get the kind of result that you're hoping for. And so let's transition the conversation a little bit. So you called me up, we got together, I think we isolated a number of particular challenges or things that maybe weren't working as efficiently as possible. And then we started to engage. So what, maybe you could share what your experiences were kind of early on working with me.
So the very first thing that I thought was, and has been extremely helpful for me, is developing a very tight and focused business development plan. So you and I sat down in the first week or two that we were working together, and we sort of went through, okay, what are the two or three things that you've seen that have actually led to business coming in the door, and or new engagements, right? Or new matters coming from your existing clients. And we sort of honed that down into really three strategies and a number of tactics under each of those strategies that I could focus my time on those things, as opposed to doing things that were sort of haphazard and random, which is what I felt like I was doing before that.
Yeah. And I think that the key thing that we focused on at the time was again, low hanging fruit. So there's a 100 things that you could go and do, but there's probably two or three that are the most efficient and results driven activities to engage in. And so we try to figure those out early on and then write out those tactics, write out those actionable things so that you have clear guidance and direction on how you're going to go after those. And again, even at that point early on, it's not perfect. It's something that might need and has been changed and altered and transitioned a little bit here and there to just kind of put a finer point on it.
No, I think that's absolutely right, Steve. I think, you know, for me, focusing on, for example, developing a number of strategic partners, people who I would continue to develop a really close relationship with, so that I'm in a good position with them to get referrals. Or, and conversely, and this is a big part of what I've always done and I continue to do, and I think it's crucial for young lawyers or existing lawyers to do, is to also give referrals to other people. You know, I sort of like being a person who is able to make connections for people. But what I hadn't been doing previously was sort of focusing in on, okay, who are the types of people who are in a position to refer me work? And then what are the ways that I can help them by introducing them to other people as well? That in particular has been particularly helpful for me. I mean, it has really limited the number of time I've spent, you know, and I'm doing air quotes here as we're sitting here.
Networking. I see them.
And right. And, you know, I'm not networking like I used to be, going to tons of, I mean, of course, this is the COVID-19 pandemic as well. So a lot of this is, you know, out the window right now. But, you know, I'm not just meeting people haphazardly. I'm focusing on the people who I think, you know, who are good strategic partners for me and who I can be good strategic partners for as well.
And I think that's an important point, is that once someone has a plan, or you have a plan, I mean, I have a plan. We all need to have some kind of plan that sort of, you know, says, hey, I don't want to just wing it and sort of hope for the best. I need to focus and target and all that. And then once we have that, it gets back into process, right? The processes that we're working on, there's a process for how do I find a strategic partner? How do I help somebody? How do I get them to reciprocate? And how do we make sure that if they're going to make a quality introduction, how do we make that as sticky as possible, so it doesn't just sort of, you know, float under the bridge and never to be seen again. So these are the kinds of things that we work on. And I think you've been a very good student of execution on that, which is really where it all, you know, the rubber hits the road.
Well, I thank you for thinking I'm a good student. I know
I know you are. I don't think you are.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, when I don't send you my list of things that I've done in the last week on a pretty regular basis, I don't feel so great about my being a student, but that doesn't mean I'm not doing it. I mean, what I am doing, and I think this is certainly from the benefit of having worked with you, is I'm not leaving opportunities out just to die on the vine. Oftentimes what would happen is, you know, I meet with somebody, I would be the one who is following up with them. I would spend a significant amount of time sort of pushing people along or nudging them along without really getting anything, you know, going, actually engagement, right? And so, you know, one thing that we've worked on together, and I think it's going to carry me forward for the rest of my career, is how do you set up those situations to bear fruit? You know, you meet with somebody and you discuss what they've got going on, and you sort of talk with them about what their needs might be. And then how do you take that and then turn that into an engagement, right? Without just, you know, randomly emailing a person once a month for a year and nothing comes back, right? And so that's one aspect of your strategies, is sort of how to tease somebody up in the right way, how to say, okay, let's talk about next steps and get commitment from a person to have another conversation where we're talking more concrete about what's going to happen next. That is something that's totally changed for me.
Yeah. And that's really important, because that goes back to, you know, the effort and the time and, you know, lawyers, you know, time is money. So, you know, every hour that's spent doing business development is an hour that isn't being billed. And the more efficient you can be, the better. And the point that Jeremy's making that I'll just kind of double back on is some of the things that we work on together is just trying to identify the truth, trying to identify, does someone have needs, how deep that rabbit hole goes, and how serious are they about proceeding forward and actually changing lawyers, changing law firms, and taking action on a problem versus just kind of letting it sit or just giving it lip service. And then how much time do we have to chase after that person or that opportunity to close it when they're just kind of blowing us off again and again and again? So one of the things that we worked on together was really about, how do we move someone to a yes and get a next step and get them to commit to those things? Or do we identify that maybe this is, you know, a no and we can just move it that way? Or how do we get someone who is not being responsive to respond and to kind of like finally get over the finish line, because we're taking some control back of that scenario. So Jeremy, I think you've done a really good job of taking the content that I provide and then executing on the field and making it happen.
Well, and I'll just say mentally, it's helped me significantly. Like I just give you an example from the last couple of weeks. I had been working on sort of what I consider to be a fairly large potential client for the last couple of years. And I had worked with them in previously and at another firm and kept in touch with people who were there, again, sort of sporadically, but, you know, recently moved to a firm. No, like I sort of got to a point where I pushed them in the right direction. We got down to making a commitment, but it turned out to be a no. And whereas previously, I think I might have been really frustrated and really upset about, you know, nobody likes to be rejected, right? I mean, it's like being asked to the prom and being rejected. Nobody wants that, right? You know, that's awful. But when you think about no as really the second best possible answer, it actually makes it okay. I remember getting a firm no and being like, okay, I feel fine about this and I'm ready to move on and put my time elsewhere where I think, you know, it's certainly going to be more valuable for those folks that are out there that are, you know, I'm either already helping or want to help.
Yeah. And if you start to add up, you know, any example that you might pull out of the air of someone that you met, you thought there was business there, you chased after them, you met again, you chased after them, you put together a proposal, chased after them again and again and again, and you got, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50 hours invested, right, in that opportunity over possibly years. And what if you had been able to identify in the first hour of a meeting, for example, that they weren't a fit and why, and actually identified and uncovered the truth and had them actually verbally tell you, you know, reasoning behind why they're not going to leave their firm, or reasoning behind why they were just using you for free advice and that's really it. I mean, that 50 hours and all, not to mention all that emotional frustration that you have, you know, it doesn't exist. You take the emotion out of it and you put logic into it. And it's just an easier way to do business development, because we're all emotional beings and we need to, you know, if you know something is good or bad, that's always better than not knowing and wondering and hoping, right? It's like, I'd rather know I have an illness than not feel well and wonder if I have an illness, right? It's always better just to know what's real. And I think that's what we're talking about here.
No, I agree with that completely. I think it's sort of liberating to know that, okay, you don't need to put the time in, and then you've got all this other time that you can dedicate where it's going to lead to something.
Yeah. So as it relates to what's next for you, I mean, you've come up the ranks very quickly at your firm by building that book and being a great lawyer. And where, you know, what's next? What do you see happening in the next couple of years as far as, you know, your trajectory?
So for me, it's been a pretty quick rise. Although, you know, I've been at Jackson Lewis now for 6 years. In April, it'll be, it's right before my second daughter's birthday. I remember my Jackson Lewis anniversary. And, you know, I started off with nothing. I think my first year that I was at Jackson Lewis, I think I originated $1,000 in business or something astonishingly low. But in the last 5 or 6 years, it's grown to a considerable amount of business. And, you know, I'm looking really for the next couple of years to at least maintain that level that I'm at right now, if not continue to grow it. And I think the way that, you know, the program that we worked on together is going to help me there is to really focus on the things that are actually leading to additional business, as opposed to just spinning my wheels on things that might not get there.
Yeah.
And that piece of it for me is extremely helpful. And the client management aspect of what we do and the developing relationship aspect of what lawyers at small firms and large firms do is the stuff that I find the most satisfaction in. And so I'm looking forward to that. And I was looking forward to having real meaningful relationships with my clients and continuing to have that.
Yeah. And I think for attorneys that are, you know, at your level and continuing the trajectory upward, it's about bringing in the work and handing it off, right? Starting to feed the troops more than you already are and having a team of people under you that support the clients that you're bringing in. Because again, not everybody is built or cut out to be a rainmaker, to be a business developer. However, people that are ambitious and interested and want to go after it, you know, they add a tremendous amount of value for not only themselves, but also for the firm. So is that a part of it too? Just continuing to build and grow and help feed the troops?
So that's absolutely right, Steve. So, you know, and I'll plug Jackson Lewis again, because I think that we're unique in this way. We have a model that really encourages people to share work and to collaborate with their colleagues in order to give clients the best possible service. And we don't really fight over origination. We don't really fight over who gets credit at the end of the year for doing X, Y, and Z work for Acme Corp or whoever, right? We really do try to approach our client service with a collaborative team-minded approach. And of course, as a practical reality, I mean, I can only bill 2,000 hours a year, or I mean, I could bill more, but I would claw my eyes out, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea is to keep yourself busy and keep others busy. And, you know, for young lawyers, again, at our firm, I think this is particularly true for young lawyers at our firm who get that opportunity to have really close client contact, and they're working with partners who want them to develop their own practice, handing off work to an associate who can help me maintain the relationship with the client and help grow the relationship with the client is fantastic. I mean, I want my clients to be able to call 3, 4, 5 people in our firm to get the right answer. I'm thrilled about that. You know, I get a lot of satisfaction out of introducing a client to another lawyer and the client coming back to me and saying, I love that lawyer. I would go have a drink with them, or I you know, we went to mediation together and we had dinner. We had such a great time. I mean, that's where it's at for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a lot of fun being in the relationship business, right? I mean, there's one thing about cranking out work, and that, again, that's fine for some people. And I think for people like you and I, you know, we love and we get excited about the relationships. We get excited about solving problems and being on the front line. And again, that's what makes, I think, things interesting. In fact, I was not offered, but I was kind of, you know, tangentially asked, would I go in house with a big firm and do coaching in house? And I just thought about that for a minute. I went, absolutely not. And the reason I say that, because I think I could have made a lot of money if I had said yes, it was really because of the relationships. I like the idea of not only helping my clients coaching and training and all that, but I love meeting new people. And I like trying to meet people, solve problems, try to walk them through the process of deciding whether or not I'm a good fit for them and vice versa. And that would all be out the window if I just, you know, spent my entire day, you know, 10 hours a day coaching lawyers in a room. That sounds to me like a place I'd go to die. So again, that's where the action is. That's where, you know, the relationships are what I think makes a career exciting. It makes a career sustainable, because the reality is, you know, is if you don't have the relationships, if you don't have your own clients, we can go back to this, but you know, then you're really at the whim of the next recession or at layoffs or at, you know, what other lawyers need you to do for their clients. And so you got to kind of, you know, pick your poison. But I think that for people like you and I and other ambitious attorneys, you know, it's really about getting out there and meeting new people and bringing in the business.
I agree with that. You know, I had a mentor at our firm who used to vacation with his clients. Can you imagine that?
Are you inviting me? Because that's what it sounds like.
I mean, that sounds like fun. I know that you and your son love to fish. I think that would be so cool to go like ice fishing, for example. Like, yeah. I've never done that. I think that would be really fun, right? But this mentor of mine who his clients were some of his best friends. Yeah. He used to travel all over the world with them, and his wife would come with their spouses. They would vacation. They knew each other's kids. The kids were friends. I mean, I'm not sure whether that hasn't happened for me yet, but if it did, that would be a real pleasure. I mean, I can't imagine a better situation.
I know, but I just wonder if that's harder to do these days than in the past. Like my father, you know, retired attorney, and, you know, people have heard me talk about my dad on the show many times. And, you know, he was doing, you know, eulogies for his clients who passed and stuff like that. Like really, you know, consigliere type, you know, relationships, friendships, deep relationships and friendships with his clients, and not all of them, but, you know, more than some. And I just wonder if that's harder today than, obviously today it's very hard, but right now, but generally speaking, I'm not hearing a lot of stories about people taking trips with clients, or, you know, it's more about like ball games used to happen or lunches happen and, you know, that type of thing. But I think that's something missing, maybe, is those really in-depth relationships that people, you know, used to have and maybe still have. I don't hear about that too often, actually.
You know, maybe it depends on where you cultivate the relationships. You know, I have people who I've met through our church, for example, who I see regularly, or our kids are friends and they're small business owners. That's probably where you have the opportunity to develop that type of close personal relationship if you're seeing them outside of the work context anyway, right? Certainly right now with the pandemic, that's probably impossible, but you know, maybe that's where it is. And if these are the people who you would hang out with socially, working with them seems like a natural next step and one that would make it very pleasurable.
Well, and it's interesting, just in kind of our, I guess, maybe a final topic, since it's just sort of rolled into it, you know, a lot of attorneys find themselves in the friend zone, you know, and I've got the air quotes too, right? The friend zone. So they've got a GC that's a very close friend. They've got a neighbor who's a GC. They've got these people in their lives that are power players in who gets business. And they're so concerned with the friendship and hurting the friendship, they never talk business. They never bring it up. They never make the ask. What's your thought about that or experience with that, that friend zone issue?
I had one client who I was friends with, our sons are friends. And I remember just saying to him one day, why aren't we working together? Like, we're just hanging out and having a good time. Like, why am I not helping you with some employment issue? And then he was just like, yeah, you know, I don't know why you're not either.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a decent way of kind of framing it, but I get it. You know, I totally get it. You don't want to mess up a relationship by mixing business and personal lives. I completely get that. But if you have people who, you know, need what you've got and that you can add some value for them, why not just approach it in a kind of a really informal way? Or another way you can start it off with, it might be like, hey, you know, I saw this article that's relevant to what, you know, what you do. And I just thought of you. And we do that. We handle issues like this all the time. And if you ever want to chat with me about it, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah. I think if you're excellent at what you do and you've got a strong relationship with somebody, those are kind of the two most important elements of why you might want to work together. And so I think it might just be a matter of wordsmithing a particular approach, whether you were, you know, you were very direct, but you did it in such a fun, friendly way that, you know, anyone that you have a relationship with would be like, yeah, or they might have a good reason why not to. You know, I'd love to, Jeremy, but I've got a 10-year relationship with one of my best friends from college, and he does amazing work, and it's, he saved us, saved the day 10 times a year. Well, that's a very different situation than, you know, yeah, we pay a lawyer or law firm, you know, X, Y, Z to, you know, to do stuff for us. It's all transactional. It'd be a lot more fun. It'll be great to work with someone I already like and trust. It's more than just a transaction. So I think, you know, maybe it's a series of questions that you ask to identify that, that opportunity or that opening, or just a direct approach like you had. But I do think it's a great way to get business. If you can figure out an angle or come up with the right type of gumption to make that form of an ask. And, you know, think people are concerned that it might blow up. Well, look, if they say no, then they say no, and you move on, you just keep the friendship. But at least then you're not wondering or hoping or just, you know, thinking like, why is this not happening? And why aren't they right. coming to me with this, with proactively to hire me? You know, they, right. people don't do that. They don't know where to tread.
No, they don't. And I think another part of this too, is I think a lot of lawyers have a sort of crippling fear of rejection, and we're sensitive, we're snowflakey, you know, I think we are. And, you know, again, this is, and my wife and I joke about this all the time. This is like I think a product of when I went to law school. I mean, I applied to so many law firms for jobs and got rejected by so many law firms, and just kind of the constant state of rejection in my first year or two during law school just made me a little bit okay with being rejected. And so I don't really have that big of an issue just asking somebody, hey, you know, it'd be great if we work together sometime, you know, or we're asking it in a kind of a direct way. Cause yeah, if they say no, they say no. I mean, that's no big deal.
Yeah. And if you take the personal side out of it and realize that, you know, people make decisions for different reasons, it may have nothing to do with you. That might help, but, right. Yeah, it's interesting. So hopefully people are listening and they're either getting some good ideas from this conversation, or at least learning a little bit more about what I'm doing every day and how I'm working with people like Jeremy. And, you know, I cherish the relationship that you and I have, but also with, you know, the class that you're in, the group that you're in. I mean, these are some of the best people in the world. I mean, there isn't one person that we work with together that, you know, you'd want to kick to the curb. I mean, they're all terrific. And that makes my life just so wonderful. So I appreciate that you're a part of it.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, and wouldn't you want to, I mean, you craft it the right way, right? You pick people who you want to work with based on how you're going to get along with them. You're going to spend a lot of time with them. I think lawyers should do that too, right? Pick people who you want to work with and you're going to enjoy spending a lot of time with. And that's a real good recipe for success.
And a recipe for being happy, quite frankly. I mean, I don't really work with law firms anymore. And the reason is because they loved giving me their problem children and they loved giving me their snowflakes and they gave me, you know, and they're all built differently. They all have different levels of ambition and interest and motivation. And, you know, that game is over. And now it's been great. Just making a mutual decision with someone that we're a good fit, that we want to partner and we want to achieve something together, and then going after it. And that's just a much nicer way for me to run my business and work with the right people, you know, the right way. So anyway, Jeremy, listen, man, thank you so much. If anybody wants to get in touch with you because they want to work at your firm, or they want to network with you, or they want to ask you questions, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Two ways. Email is always good. Jeremy.Schneider@JacksonLewis.com. And then of course, LinkedIn. I'm very active LinkedIn user, share a lot of content from the firm. So there's a lot of value out there for stuff that the firm puts out that, you know, I think our clients are helpful with. And I answer all messages on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. And I'll see you in class soon.
Thanks,
all right, everybody. And thanks for taking some time to spend with Jeremy and I today. And the hope is that you got some good takeaways and ideas and work through some things. And, you know, that you're one step closer to being that lawyer, someone who's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. Take care, everybody, and be safe.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer. Life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, Fretzen.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.